It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12, and by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
And welcome, everybody, to this edition of Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in the Rochester area dedicated to the well-being of youth athletes from peewee all the way through college athletics. And all I can say is, smell the air. It is World Series time, one of my favorite times of year. And those who are everyday frequent listeners of Youth Sports Now know that my beloved Red Sox are in the World Series, and that's going to be taking place at my favorite place on earth, which is Fenway Park, the cathedral of Major League sports. You know, I think back on my childhood and my days watching the World Series and the memories that I have. And the earliest memory that I have of a World Series and the Red Sox is 1967, when I think of the Red Sox against the St. Louis Cardinals. So it's another rematch. And I think back of the pitching battles between Bob Gibson and Jim Longborg and those two teams. And, of course, Tim McCarver, who is not on my favorite list of broadcasters, but behind the plate during the 1967 World Series. And then, of course, moving up through the 2004 World Series when the Red Sox finally won one. It's funny, as such a big Red Sox fan as a youth, watching the 2004 World Series, which was a sweep, I was actually in a hotel room in Orlando, Florida, by myself, because I went down to the sports bar at the hotel I was staying at, and there were so many Cardinals fans that I said I didn't want to watch the game with them. So I went up to my room and I watched the game, and I have to admit, I shed a tear or two when the Sox won that one. So we're definitely hoping that it ends the same way as it did back in 2004. Of course, you know, 1986 for the Red Sox was a real downer. That was a heartbreak against the New York Mets. But the reason I bring all this up is not necessarily going down memory lane with you, but the fact that youth athletics and kids who love baseball, that, you know, the kids who are out there and love the game just for the game of baseball, they are going to be missing the opportunity to have some memories made this week. And the reason is because, once again, we have put the dollar in front of the passion. And Major League Baseball has decided again that the World Series will be played 100% exclusively at night, which means that the kids are not going to be able to stay up and watch. And, you know, if you remember a few shows back on the editorial that I did on in my dugout, I complained to Major League Baseball and continue to complain to Major League Baseball about the opportunity that they take away for the kids to either rush home from school or at least on a weekend to watch a World Series game during the day and maybe have some memories of their own. And even the kids who can't go to Fenway Park if mom or dad have tickets, because the games start too late and end too late. And that puts school and academics out onto the back porch, which is very unfortunate. So not going down memory lane for myself, but just to bring that topic up with the kids who are really going to be missing something and making some memories with friends and family during this World Series. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Let's hope that the Red Sox move on and become the world champions, at least from my book. And, you know, one of the other memories that I have is going to Fenway Park. And if you know anything about the location of Fenway, you know that it's not too far from the Charles River. And what do people do on the Charles River? Well, they feed the ducks. That's, you know, the setting for the children's book, The Ugly Duckling, is actually the Charles River. And the other thing they do down the Charles River is that they sail. And that is the topic for tonight's show. we will be talking to a sailing expert who is attempting, and I hope he's successful, in bringing young children and youth back to the sport of sailing and get them out on the water and working to understand the sport, have fun with the sport, and to make some memories of their own. So sailing down the Charles River is certainly appropriate as we talk about sailing and the World Series. So when we come back, we're going to have Kyle Leonard join us, and he is going to take us down the sailing river of youth sports, and we'll be talking to him about why it's such a great sport.
Youth Sports Now sets sail on WYSL 92.1 FM 1040 AM. Get the podcast at WYSL1040.com.
Got into a fight. Well, I feel so broken. I want to go home. So hoist up the John D. sail. See how the mainsail sets.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery, from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. Performance 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
The best gift you can give your son is that of a McQuaid Jesuit education. Come and see why there is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit during our fall open house on Sunday, November 3rd. Student-led tours will run from noon until 2 p.m. Teachers, staff members, and coaches will be available to answer any questions you might have. McQuaid Jesuit, 1800 South Clinton Avenue at the corner of Elmwood and South Clinton Avenues. For more information, visit our website at McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit, live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
And welcome back to Youth Sports Now, and we will, in fact, sail away down to the topic of youth sports and sailing. And joining us tonight on Youth Sports Now is Kyle Leonard. Kyle is with Shoreline Sailboats, and it's interesting because Kyle contacted Youth Sports Now and was active with us on our social media, so don't forget that you can definitely follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And when Kyle contacted us, we looked into the topic and thought, hey, this is a great, great segment to have, because one of the things that we try and do here on Youth Sports Now is to talk about some of the sports, talk about some of the athletic activities that kids can do or they do. And we try and look at some alternatives to the modern sports, the regular sports that everybody talks about, the football, the baseball, the hockey, the soccer, lacrosse, and so on. So we've talked in the past about some sports like fencing, and we've talked in the past about sports that are just a little bit different for kids. And sailing, it just seems like a natural topic to get into. So Kyle Leonard from Shoreline Sailboats, welcome to Youth Sports Now.
Thanks, Greg.
You know, we talked a little bit, Kyle, via electronic wire here with emails and tweets and all that kind of good stuff. But tell me a little bit about your background and what was it that got you into sailing, and why'd you do it?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm from the area, and my family's from Summers up at Oak Orchard, which is up on Lake Ontario, north of Albion, New York. We've always gone there during the summer and kind of grew up there, summer vacations. And we're right around the water. We're always in the water. And eventually, my dad really got involved in sailing and got us a boat when we were pretty young. My brother Darren was probably, oh gosh, he was probably in, I'm thinking maybe I was probably in sixth grade. He was younger than I was, so we started pretty young. And we came from a family of sailors. My mom sailed snipes. My grandfather built and sailed snipes and raced them up there. So we just kind of naturally fell into it. And in that time, it was a big sailing was big at Oak Orchard, and it was during the late 70s, during the 80s, and right into the early 90s when we were actively racing with our family.
And Kyle, what was it about the sport of sailing that got you interested? Was it just the fact that your family was into it, or was there something that was very personally appealing to you? Because obviously it's something that you've continued with.
Exactly. You know, I think of it, you know, there's a nostalgia to it for me. I think it would be kind of like the same thing that people feel about baseball. We kind of harken back to what happened a long time ago, and the heroes of baseball kind of are with us today when we think of baseball. And for me, the heroes of sailing were people in the past who had sailed near our cottage, and I had heard stories of it. So sailing was kind of in our blood, and it was a big part of being around the lakes. I think probably even kids who grew up on Canisius Lake and other areas in that time were into sailing quite a bit because it was done much more back in the 70s, probably. The reason that Darren and I got interested now was because we kind of seen a decline in sailing. It was concerning to us. So with that, we just kind of, that's why we started our business, Shoreline Sailboats.
So, you know, Kyle, talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, there are so many sports out there or athletic activities that have really taken a hit because of modern technology with, you know, every kid is on an iPad or an iPhone, and they're not necessarily doing active things. Right. And, you know, even the baseball, footballs, and soccer, and those have seen declines. But something as specialized as sailing, I can see where it may take a decline. What have you and your brother seen or at least noticed within the sailing industry, if you will, and the decline with the youth?
Yeah, it's interesting. We both had read a book by Nicholas Hayes called Saving Sailing, and Nicholas Hayes wrote in his book and has some great statistics on the decline of sailing since 1979. Sailing, people who call themselves sailors and participate in sailing, is down by 70% since 1979. And he goes on to write in his book that by 1997, it had dropped 40%. So there's another 40%. So really less than 1% of Americans actually identify themselves as sailors. So it's a shrinking adult sailing that's kind of also affected the youth sailing a little bit. There's a gap. I think youth sailing is kind of starting to grow quite a bit around the country. And the problem that we have is turning those youth sailors into adult sailors, because it's really kind of one of those sports that is family-oriented. I kind of said to you, emailed you and said it was a sport where a grandmother and a granddaughter could go out and share an afternoon sail, or could even be involved in racing. It's a real family-type activity. But that's kind of declining because the older crowd that is sailing, they're going to start to dwindle. I guess people who are call themselves sailors now, are the average age is 55 years old, and that's about 43% of all the sailors are above 55. And then it goes on above that. The average owner of a sailboat is 55 years old, too, even if we look at all the boat owners across the country.
Well, you know, we're actually going to be talking about some of the boat owners and how, you know, this can work out for the youth and their families. But before we do that, you know, one of the things that I think is important to point out is, you know, parents are concerned, as well as the Center for Disease Control, with childhood obesity and things of that nature that are taking place in our country. But, you know, when you think about sailing, obviously what comes to mind, at least for me personally, as I said in the open, is watching the sailboats down the Charles River in Boston and, you know, taking in a game at Fenway and maybe, you know, going over the river later on, feed some ducks and watch these sailboats go by. But the fact of the matter is that sailing is something that you can actively use both your body and your brain, because there's tactics that need to be taken care of. I'm sure there's rules of sailing. So let's talk a little bit, Kyle, about, you know, some of the physical things that it takes to be a sailor and how they would be good for kids today.
Good point. I think there has been some kind of studies that say that kids who kind of have attention deficit do well in sailing because they get such input, such sensory input while they're on these boats. I think of when they first start out in sailing at a youth program, the instructors will go through all the safety requirements to make sure everybody knows how to get it in and out of the boat. They'll capsize the boat and make sure that everybody knows how to right their boat and empty it of water and go on to sail. And after you get through the basics, there's a lot of feeling, kind of a seat of a pants feeling, kind of like maybe pilots used to have back before instruments, where you had to really fly and understand flight and feel what's going on with the plane. You have the sensory input. I think the same thing happens in sailing. For some people, I think when they sail, it's really a heightened sense of a connectedness to everything around you. That's what I feel. It's kind of a, you know, I would have to say it's almost spiritual when you're in the zone or right in the groove with sailing. You can feel this thing. Everything's right. It's tuned right. And I think kids who pick up on that really kind of feel the joy of it, and they're constantly active. That's the thing about a boat. You really can't sit still. In light wind, you probably could, but in some decent wind where you're having fun, you're really active every moment, making sure that you're tuning your body to the boat's position. So it is one of those, I wouldn't call it overly strenuous. You're not huffing and puffing sometimes. Sometimes you are, though. But in most cases, you're really getting a pretty good workout, and it's a full body kind of workout, too.
And what about the cerebral workout you get? I mean, I've been out on sailboats before, and certainly I haven't been the sailor. I've been the pleasure cruiser, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do talk to these sailors, and they say that, you know, if you especially are in a race, there are tactical decisions that need to be made, and therefore it gives that brain a workout, too.
Exactly. And, you know, these kids, I think if they go through these youth programs for a summer and sail, say, an Optimus, which is about an 8-foot-long little dinghy, which is a nice little boat, really great for an 8-year-old to a 14-year-old to sail, perfect. If they sail during the summer and, you know, watch the America's Cup, they will understand the tactics that are going on in that major race. They'll recognize why they're doing what they're doing. They kind of, all of a sudden, you understand. It's almost like you have to be in it, like any sport probably, where you pick up those subtleties of the sport and the language of the sport. There's a lot of language that goes with sailing and other sports too. I don't need to negate that, but there's some strange words that when you got on a boat, it's disorienting you first. But these kids get this language skill. They learn new words, new ideas about how things interact and work together, that you really, I never feel in other, you know, it's hard to replicate it on the ground. You really have to be out on the water and feeling the wind and the water and being able to control your destiny, and also not being able to go exactly where you want to be. It's kind of when I was a kid, it was like, you know, I have to go one direction, then I have to go another direction because I can't go right into the wind. It's kind of one of those life lessons, you know. It almost parallels what happens in life. You can't go directly towards your goal sometimes. We have to tack, and we have to make these little movements towards this major goal. And I think sailing kind of, in some way, parallels life for kids that way.
So we are speaking with Kyle Leonard from Shoreline Sailboats, who's a lifelong sailor and is trying to move the decline needle in sailing in the Rochester area for the youth back to maybe where it was during his childhood. Kyle, one of the things that I know you're doing is working with your brother on a project to build sailboats for young children. Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit of how that started and what you're doing and why that's important.
Yeah, you know, it was out of a sense of nostalgia too, building these boats, because my grandfather built sailboats. He built a Snipe in his basement and went out and raced it at Oak Orchard Yacht Club up where we lived in the 50s. And I worked with wood, and so it was kind of fun to think that we could build these little boats kind of cheaply. They are pretty expensive if you went to go buy a brand new Optimus, but we could build these little knockabout Optimus because it's pretty rocky up there on the shore of Lake Ontario, and I'm sure they're going to get banged around. So I talked my brothers into, actually my brother Dana and Darren and myself, three of us got together and said, let's build these Optimus the old school way. It's kind of a fun story because the Optimist is huge. It's got over 400,000 registered boats. It's the biggest one design class, I believe, in sailing for these little tiny 8-footers. They were built 8 foot long because that's how long a piece of plywood was. And it was designed down in Clearwater, Florida by a guy named Clark Mills. The Optimist Club, which was a national club back then, it still is operating today. The Optimists, they're doing things for youth. And they said, you know, they had down in Clearwater, they had this soapbox derby race. So they didn't have many hills. Florida's pretty flat. So they went to Clark Mills, who was a boat designer, and said, you know, what can we do? He said, you know, why don't I just design a small boat for you guys? There's so much water here. The kids can go sailing instead of doing soapbox derby. And so the Optimists were very excited about it. And Clark Mills went home and over the course of about an evening, knocked together one of these little Optimist dinghies and brought it in. And that was the start of the Optimists. And they started racing them in Clearwater, Florida, and it took off and it moved its way north all the way to, you know, up the East Coast and into Michigan, and it just blossomed. And eventually it was taken over by the European, kind of took it over and measured it, and then it's really a strict club racing now. I couldn't possibly build an Optimist to rule now. It's down to the 2-millimeter measurement. So these, we'd have to have new boats for these kids to actually race an Optimist out in an actual race, but we thought we could build them for fun. And I think the kids, you know, having your dad build you a boat that you go out and sail on for the first time. And this summer we celebrated with my nieces and nephews went out and sailed, and my son did the little Optimist on a pond. And we got to see him sail for the first time in boats that we built. It was very exciting.
You know, that just sounds like, you know, a wonderful, not only an opportunity for athletic and cerebral activity, but, you know, the time that you spend with your family and friends, which is something that, you know, a lot of youth sports is prohibitive. I mean, mom and dad, and if those who listen to the show know that my opinion, of course, is mom and dad shouldn't be out on the field, the court, or the ice with their kids. But this is something that they can do together, and it provides a lot of opportunities for good, strong family ties.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you completely. With kids going out in these youth sailing programs, to be out there on their own, being instructed by an instructor is a great thing. I think it, even as, you know, whenever I've instructed kids, I always think, you know, it's much easier for kids like my own children to learn from somebody else than learn from me anyway. The heightened sense of responsibility seems to be kicking in. But I think that you're right about that. When they come back to shore, like my son's going to go take youth sailing lessons this summer up at Oak Orchard. They have a program there up at Oak Orchard Yacht Club, and there's quite a few around in the area. I can list them later on if you want. But the, he'll go up there, and for around $200 for the season, he can go out and learn to sail with these instructors, which is great. But when he gets done, he can come home, and we can go out and go sailing in a little boat just like he has, and we can go check it out together and his skills. So kind of like coming home and throwing the baseball with dad, we'll just end up going out and doing a little sailing together and see what kind of skills he's built.
Yeah, an absolutely wonderful opportunity. We are speaking with Kyle Leonard from Shoreline Sailboats, and we're talking about, you know, an alternative sport for the kids and the youth of our area. Kyle, what does a parent need to know about if their son or daughter came to them and said, hey, mom or dad, we want to be a sailor. We want to learn how to sail. What can you tell the parents that they need to know about doing this?
Yeah, if a parent, you know, that's kind of interesting because usually it's probably word of mouth. A kid may have talked to somebody who knows sailing, or they have a family friend who sails. That's probably how it kind of comes about, unless there would be a program nearby and they know there's a summer program. If they went to parents, I would say, as a parent myself, I would check out the program first online, which is kind of easy. If you go to our website, which is shorelinesailboats.com, we have a list of the some area clubs that they can then use as a jumping-off spot to go check out the availability and the times and the schedules. Just to look around in our area, we have Canandaigua Yacht Club that has youth sailing. There's Cuca Lake Sailing Foundation. There's Alcott Yacht Club. There's up at Oak Orchard where we sail. The Rochester Canoe Club is really nice. We went up there this summer. It's a beautiful little spot up on Irondequoit Bay. Rochester Yacht Club also has a junior sailing program, and then over at Sodus Bay, there's a junior sailing program. And I don't think I've listed all the areas, but if you go to our site, you can find them real quickly. You can do Google searches pretty easy, too. But then I would probably, you know, as a parent, I'd want to go talk to the people just to touch base with who they are. So I would go and, you know, and see what, or at least talk to him on the phone and see the credentials, because some of these are very impressive instructors. I'm thinking, if you go to up in Ronicoid Bay, it's the Rochester Canoe Club. They're a sailing club, and they're the oldest yacht club in Rochester, but they're such a just a small, family-oriented club. We drove up there, and it's nestled down in the trees, and they've got kind of almost a metal pole barn that they is their clubhouse, and it's they got picnic tables, and it's very inexpensive to join that club. So if you wanted to join, if your kids were wanting to go sail there, you get a little break on the price for the sailing lessons, but it's not overwhelming money. And just go down in there, and you can drive down anytime and talk to people. They were so nice, and they talked to us when we were there. We drove up because we wanted to see the Sunfish Masters was going on this summer up there. And Doug Kukanen, who is one of the instructors, actually has an amazing racing record. So you'd be instructed by a guy who has actually won the Sunfish Worlds and has won the Sunfish Masters this summer. And he's the guy teaching you how to sail sunfish. It's pretty incredible.
That is great. I mean, there's not many sports or activities that the youth can do today where they are being coached or instructed by professionals or even former professionals. You know, Kyle, as we wind things down a little bit here, one of the things that occurs to me, you know, when I was younger, in my younger days, I was addicted to watching the America's Cup races on television. At the time, I believe it was one of the major sports networks, and I did notice that this year it was not on as much as it was in the past. But do you think things like the America's Cup races and so on can get kids more involved in sailing?
Yeah, you know, I would hope so. You know, I think, you know, it's a short period of time it was on, and, you know, it only comes around every once in a while. So it doesn't have a yearly World Series event where your team is going to come back next year. It's going to take a while. I'm not sure exactly how much time is in between each America's Cup, but I've watched all of them most of my life, and it's really changed so much because now we have these boats that are, you know, they're going 55 miles an hour, and I've never gone 55 miles an hour on a powerboat. I've gone pretty fast. I've been screaming along on a powerboat, so that was scary, but I've never gone as fast as these sailboats are going now that they're foiling. So it's kind of changing the sport. It's kind of changed the way people view the sport, because we have non-sailors now who can kind of watch the race because it's not slow, and they can see the activity and see the goal ahead. They can see the marks that the boats are turning, and it's more timely for people who are non-sailors, and I think they kind of get it. We, of course, if you get on a regular sailboat, we were screaming along pretty fast this summer on my brother's sailboat, and we were going 13 knots, so it was probably maybe 15 miles an hour, and we were probably, it felt like breakneck speeds because the sailboat was planing. It was a 25-foot sailboat, and we were just having a great time down the front of a wave. But that, for us, was exhilarating at 15 miles an hour. It's for us, speed is kind of relative in a sailboat when you're racing other people. You feel like 15 is amazing, and I can't imagine what these America's Cup boats are feeling like at going 55 miles an hour. Just incredible. Jumping right out of the water on these foils and going. And on a side note, there's a lot of activity now around trying to get other boats to foil. We sell laser performance boats, so we have the laser as one of the boats that we sell. And they've just recently configured a way of getting a laser up out of the water, another company has. So you can actually buy a laser sailboat, which is about 13 feet long, and you can get this thing to jump out of the water. And once you're up out of the water, your resistance decreases, so your speed increases quite a bit. So once you're foiling, this is kind of the it's a major change in the sport for us.
Well, maybe there's a way we can combine the sailing for the kids, then also pilot lessons as they fly through the air on these fast sailboats. Kyle, as we wrap things up, you know, if someone needs to or wants to contact you to learn more about sailing and even purchasing a boat for their kids or for their family, how can they reach you and when can they reach you?
Well, yeah, our website is shorelinesailboats.com. It's one word. And if you want to check it out, you can kind of see the inventory of sailboats we have access to. We don't always have those in stock. We try to keep Optimists and 420s and boats like that. So if they wanted to, they could contact us. The email is right there. And we'd love to talk to anybody on the phone. Our phone numbers are available on our website. And feel free to call us. We'd love to talk about sailing. And and keeping it alive for people.
Hey, Kyle, thank you very much for joining us on U Sports Now.
As
we love to give alternative sports that are out there, and sailing certainly is one of the ones that is most favorite. So get those kids out there on a boat and see what they can do. I'm sure that you'd be amazed as a parent to see what kinds of things they can do. When we come back, Mike Naparella joins us, and we're going to talk about some of the injuries that took place in the NFL this weekend and what happens if they happen to your athlete.
There's more to come on Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM. Get the live stream of the podcast at WYSL1040.com.
Proudly conservative. WYSL. Rochester's home for America's morning show with Quinn and Rose. 92.1 FM and 1040 AM. WYSL, Avon, Rochester.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jim Andrews. I've worked closely with Little League to develop pitch count regulations. Our goal is to protect our youth baseball players from suffering arm injuries. Go to littleleague.org for more information.
The best gift you can give your son is that of a McQuaid Jesuit education. Come and see why there is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit during our fall open house on Sunday, November 3rd. Student-led tours will run from noon until 2 p.m. Teachers, staff members, and coaches will be available to answer any questions you might have. McQuaid Jesuit, 1800 South Clinton Avenue at the corner of Elmwood and South Clinton Avenues. For more information, visit our website at McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family, where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you win. You'll feel the difference.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and it's time for Your Peak Performance, the segment where our good friend Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training gives us some vital information to make sure that our young athletes are staying fit and well, and if they're not, how Mike and Peak Performance can help them out. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, we had a kind of a crazy weekend in the NFL, and it's a topic about injuries that we've really never gotten deeply into. So why don't we get into that? You know, we watched Sam Bradford, who's the quarterback from the St. Louis Rams. We've watched Reggie Wayne, the receiver from the Indianapolis Colts. They both tore their ACLs, and they're going to be out of commission for the rest of the season. Now, when a young athlete gets a knee injury like this, I have to imagine that one of the first things that they and their parents and their coaches that they worry about is, oh my gosh, could it be the ACL? So what is an ACL first? And then, you know, what do we do about it?
Well, I like your question because a lot of people hear those three letters and they're scary letters to hear, but they don't know what it is. And so let's start with that. The anterior cruciate ligament, there's two what are called cruciate ligaments inside the middle of the knee, the center of the knee. The anterior cruciate ligament attaches on the lower leg bone, the tibia, anterior or in front. The posterior cruciate sort of runs right next to it, and it attaches in the back of the knee. And the anterior cruciate ligament is really responsible for a number of things, but it helps control knee motion in combinations of movement, which are typically how people get hurt, where the knee may buckle inward, sort of like a knock-kneed position, and rotate. And with a quad force in the front of the knee, where the quad tendon attaches to the front of that tibia, when that's contracting as well, that's going to pull that tibia forward. And so the anterior cruciate ligament, particularly when we test it, is a test where we can pull that tibia forward. You'll see that a lot of times when one of those players goes down in the field and the athletic trainer or the team doc, they come out in the field, that player's laying on the ground, and that healthcare professional will put their hands on their thigh and their knee and their leg, and one hand will be behind the top of the calf, and we'll see whether or not that tibia moves forward too far. If that anterior cruciate ligament's been torn or stretched, one of the easy tests to look at it in, we'll see that tibia rise too far forward, and that's one of our indicators that something may be wrong there. And you're right, it's a common concern because there's so many of them. You know, I went back and just really quickly looked, Greg, at the NFL alone, only the NFL. And from training camp until now, we're only 6 weeks or so in the season, right? I think I looked as a quick online look. There's maybe 12 players already who have lost their entire season due to anterior cruciate ligament injuries. That's amazing. It's just a lot of them. And I know a lot of the media are talking right now about how many injuries occurred this weekend, and obviously a number of them were ACLs.
So, Mike, is there something that can make it preventable? I mean, it seems to me, and you're the expert at this, that it's not an injury that you can necessarily prevent or train for. It's just something that happens, and it could be either career-ending or it could be, you know, season-ending.
Well, and certainly the great majority of players, you know, athletes who go through an ACL, the great, great majority will come back and play if they choose to. Unfortunately, there is, you know, some continued risk of having that happen. You know, when any athlete steps on the field, that risk exists. And there's stories of female athletes, for example, Rebecca Lobo, who played professional basketball and played at UConn. I believe she was at 3 or 4, and Shea Ralph, who was another player from UConn, who I think maybe had 5 total ACL reconstructions between her 2 knees over the course of her career. So you certainly can come back, and people even come back from multiple ACL reconstructions. And, you know, probably when we're talking about the NFL, the greatest example of someone coming back very quickly is someone like Adrian Peterson for the Vikings, who came back, I want to say that he was playing within 6 months or so, which is really incredible. And again, we've talked before on the show, Greg, how these athletes are superhuman sort of athletes. They genetically are gifted in terms of their work ethic, the professionals they have surrounding them to help them be successful. They've been blessed in a lot of ways. Normal Joes off the street aren't all going to be able to return from their ACL to competitive elite-level contact sports like football in 6 months, but you certainly aren't typically doomed to never play again. But, you know, you asked, is it preventable? And I think that that's a great question. Really, all of the studies that have been done in the recent decade or more show that with good preseason or pre-practice sort of prevention-type programs, and those are ranging from just being thorough on flexibility and strength to including what would be called jumping or plyometric or reactive drills, to including balance drills, that almost all those programs have been shown to be at least 70% effective at reducing the incidence of ACL tears. Now, these studies are normally being done in high school and college athletes, and very frequently that risky population of female athletes. So I don't think I've seen anything that was a study yet looking at changing the risk factors in professional athletes, for example. But we do know that the data at least supports that, you know, proper programming can contribute to some level of prevention, but certainly we don't want to throw around the word prevention too strongly and imply that literally you can do enough things to absolutely guarantee an injury won't happen, because they do, and the great majority of them are actually non-contact injuries. So that happenstance of someone falling on your leg, it does happen, but the greater majority are non-contact injuries. So It has more to do with your body. It's dealing with gravity and momentum, and the ground surface, and all those sort of variables that don't even include the randomness of another player falling on you.
Mike, you know, you mentioned we are speaking with Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training, and this is your Peak Performance segment where we talk about the well-being of our youth athletes and use examples like the NFL and these gentlemen getting injured with their ACLs. Mike, when you were talking about the explanation for what an ACL is and the tests, you guys at Peak Performance have just added a special program to help the Rochester area athletes get some peace of mind in those really early hours or days after an injury. Tell me more about this new program, how it works, and how people can get to you.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking about that. You know, in this day and age of healthcare, and there's so many kids participating in sports, and we have very skilled professionals available for people. There's pediatricians. There's orthopedic surgeons, there's athletic trainers at the school, there's physical therapists. But even in the school where there's athletic trainers available, there's just so many kids participating in athletics that do get nicked and dinged up or even maybe a more serious injury. And sometimes in those early hours or days after the injury, you know, parents and or coaches who are kind of helping talk through this what-to-do scenario, sometimes they're choosing to wait it out because there's just some uncertainty. They don't want to go to the emergency room and sit around for 5 hours or 8 hours to be given simplistic advice and still have to go see an orthopedic doctor after that. They still walk away not oftentimes being sure what was wrong with them. And as we always advocate, Greg, if there's any concern for a very serious injury or a fracture or something looks out of place, absolutely those people need to get to the emergency room or call their doctor immediately. But the great majority of injuries aren't like that, and so we've had lots of parents and coaches express to us over the years and even in the recent months the sort of stress and even the distress that they feel over having a young athlete sitting in front of them. They just got injured, but they're really not certain whether it's a serious injury, and the level of pain this athlete has equates to the severity of injury, or maybe even being uncertain that the kid looks like they're trying to walk it off or gut it out and get back to playing, but they're really not sure if there's a more serious injury in there. We've certainly seen young athletes who thought they just had an ankle sprain, but based on the evaluation when we saw them, sent them back to an orthopedist or got films and found out there was actually a fracture there or a growth plate injury. And it was chosen to handle differently than the athlete or the parent or the coach was first thinking. Or something that was a strain was really a tear, or something that was just a generic sprain idea actually was a torn ACL or an MCL or a meniscus or a labral injury to the shoulder. And so just we wanted to offer something for the community out there to be able to say, you can come in for a pretty short visit, it's maybe a 15-minute sort of thing, almost like a walk-in. You know, they give us a call, and we've got spots available during the day where we should be able to get them in that day or the next and try to give them some peace of mind. I mean, it's a small $25 fee. But that way we can just help try and point them in the right direction. Some of these people can go ahead and wait on it a few days. It's probably going to go away. There's no signs of a real significant injury. But some others are going to need to get right over to an orthopedic doctor. Some may be appropriate to just go ahead and start what we call direct access physical therapy, and we can maybe even get them started that day to get them back on their feet again so they're not sitting around for extended times, just not being sure what to do.
So, Mike, with that in mind, you know, of having this sports the sports training there, you know, when you see an ACL tear at Peak Performance or one of the physical therapists sees one, how long do these things take to rehab after some sort of reconstruction?
Well, that can vary a little bit depending upon what sport they're going back to and also the preferences of the doctor. You know, most doctors are probably going to allow people to go back to running maybe in the four-month range, some as early as 3.5 months or so may let them start running. Some others may wait until 5 months. Now, we've talked in some of the weeks previous about that higher-level transitional period of getting back to athletics, that high-demand functional phase. And so even when they start the running in agility, if they started at 3 or 4 months, or they started at 5, 2 weeks later, you're not playing a sport. I mean, we still want to make sure that we take them through sequential and progressive, sort of structured and increasingly demanding and complex activities, so we're increasingly mimicking the sport that they have to do with their position that they're in. So, you know, that may take 6 weeks. It may take 2 months or more, depending on how well they're doing in terms of when they actually make it back to playing. So some athletes might be practicing in their sport, you know, as early as maybe 6 months, or if they're doing just some really light drills, it could be sooner. But some may not be going back to 10 or 12 months to play because it depends on, you know, how complex their injury was. Was there a meniscus injury associated with that that had to be repaired, or another ligament like a medial collateral? And some people just, you know, everyone wants to be the first person back. Everybody wants to be what we'd say on the front end of the bell curve. But we do know that that bell curve exists. So some people get better quicker. A lot of people are in the middle of that. And there are some people who just go slower. And what we really want to do is make sure that we structure things in a safe way so that no matter who you are and no matter where your body and your physiology and your genetics may be, that we've really served you well in terms of designing a program that when you do go back, the greater chances are that you're going to stay back, that we're not playing a name-that-tune game in terms of trying to look good by getting you back quickly, but maybe ignoring some of the things that could be wrong.
Well, Mike, you know, obviously, and that's why the name of peak performance is so important, because, well, you know, I know that you get those athletes back into their peak performance, and certainly an ACL injury is something that concerns the parents and the coaches and, of course, the athlete. And with that in mind, you know, Mike, when we've talked off the show, we've discussed some things about the ACL, and I've been looking it up on social media, on the Facebook and the Twitter sites and so on. And also some websites, and it seems that there's this hot topic in the sports community, especially the youth sports community, regarding, you know, young female athletes. And it seems as if their parents and coaches say that it's true that females tend to hurt their ACLs more frequently than the guys. So let's ask the expert, is that true? And if it is, why?
You're absolutely right. You know, and I think that we've had more than enough studies over the last probably two decades published in really well-respected peer-reviewed journals in physical therapy and certainly in medicine and orthopedics that pretty consistently tell us, depending upon the age group and the activities that they're doing, that young female athletes seem to be anywhere maybe from 5 to 7 times more likely or more frequently injuring their ACL. So that's definitely true.
So
when you ask why that is, well, that's where things get a little bit dicey. I think oftentimes in research, you know, we're looking for the one answer. And the challenge is that we're dealing with human bodies that have a lot of variables. And so one of the challenges is that, you know, if we in fact have let's just say for this point of discussion, there's 10 different potential factors to injuring your ACL. Well, the problem is that if you have this big population of people, and there's not one clear factor, but there's 10 factors mixed in amongst all these people. When you go study it, the study may not show that there's one strong underlying factor that we can all point to. But we have to be able to go back and look at people individually, and that's why at peak performance it's so important to us to sort of handle each athlete individually like that, because I think they all bring something different to the table. So the research has looked at a number of things with females. One thing is the hormonal changes, the timing of the menstrual cycle and how hormonal changes appear to be potentially increasing the laxity risk of those ligaments. For others, there's anatomic variables. You know, girls a little bit more frequently tend to have a little bit more of a knock-kneed or knees together in midline posture, and sometimes coupled with an increased inward twist of their thigh bones, of their hips. And so we see those knees sort of what we call squinting patellas or looking at each other a bit more. And so when they're landing, the knees may have a tendency to buckle inward a little bit more, and that can be a stress to the ACL. It may be related to pronated or what we call flat feet. And when someone's got really flat feet and they're landing and trying to decelerate, their leg will have a tendency to collapse inward more into that combination posture that can be a little bit risky. And, of course, there's always the issues of, you know, where is a female's status of their strength, their power, their ability to decelerate compared to their male counterparts, and also the overall factors of balance, what we call dynamic stability, the ability to react or have neuromuscular abilities to decelerate very quickly, which are nervous system things but also strength things. And so those are all factors that have been talked about, but I think it's pretty clear from the studies that we really can't point to any one single reason, and that's why our prevention sort of programs need to be so thorough. And it's also, Greg, why we would advocate for kids doing these sort of performance training programs or prevention-type programs, because just merely playing the sport isn't adequate enough. And you look at the NFL. No, those guys are doing training. They are doing prevention sort of work. They are lifting weights and doing plyometrics and agility drills, and they work on that stuff hard. And nevertheless, they have non-contact ACLs. So even when you work on it, it can happen. But we know that girls have that increased frequency or tendency, based on the literature at least. And so we really want to see that change over time. And there's obviously numbers of professionals across the U.S. and even the world that are increasingly participating in prevention-type programs to help that.
Well, Mike, you know, we've got a show on youth sports now coming up in the coming weeks regarding cheerleaders. And it's always been said that cheerleaders are definitely the one category, aside from female athletes, and not to say that a cheerleader isn't a female athlete, but that they have a lot of these injuries. And I think maybe when we do that show, we will we'll bring up this whole ACL topic, because I know we want to talk about the protocols the doctors have and you know, what it comes down to fix an ACL. So we'll definitely bring that topic back up. Mike, so if we want to have these kids tested at peak performance, tell us as we wrap up where they call, what website they go to, how they get in touch with you to do this.
Sure. Our office number is 218-0240, and we are located over in East Rochester, which has been really awesome for us because we're just a mile off the East Rochester exit on 490. So it's very accessible for a lot of those East Side communities and even the Central Rochester and even West Side and North Side communities. So they can contact us at 218-0240. And if they want to know more about just our staff and our philosophy and our approach and our background, which is a little bit unique, they can certainly look us up on the website at www.peakptrochester.com.
That's great, Mike. As always, you know, you are a wealth of information, and it's information that I think is so vital to the well-being of our young athletes in the area. So, hey, buddy, we'll see you next week, and we'll continue this conversation. And as always, have a great week, and, you know, good luck with all your sports that your kids are doing. And we'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week, Greg.
Thanks, Mike. When we come back, a view from my dugout.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. Performance 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
The best gift you can give your son is that of a McQuaid Jesuit education. Come and see why there is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit during our fall open house on Sunday, November 3rd. Student-led tours will run from noon until 2 p.m. Teachers, staff members, and coaches will be available to answer any questions you might have. McQuaid Jesuit, 1800 South Clinton Avenue at the corner of Elmwood and South Clinton Avenues. For more information, visit our website at McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience. We'll be right back.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
It's money that matters. You're what I say.
On Tuesday, the NCAA handed down its decision regarding violations by the University of Miami men's basketball and football teams, penalizing the university with 3 years probation and loss of scholarships. The NCAA says that the university lacked institutional control over its program and its failure to monitor boosters, coaches, and students. These penalties are in addition to the self-imposed ban on bowl games that the university determined in 2011 and 2012. The punishment ends an investigation that began in 2009 and stems from a booster giving thousands of dollars and other benefits to Miami athletes for appearances and bar hopping. I think the NCAA needs to dole out one whopper of a penalty against themselves for lack of intelligence. My beef against the NCAA has nothing to do with what everyone else is talking about today, mainly that there's no equality in violation decisions between colleges and the increasing popular opinion that college players should be paid. No, my argument with the NCAA is for, as always, putting the almighty dollar and the sport ahead of the education that these athletes are supposed to be getting at these institutions of higher learning. I get the fact that taking away college scholarships financially hurts the institution. I get that putting them on probation means the college has to be squeaky clean. What I don't get is why they continue to penalize the school and not the system. College sports is big. No, wait a minute. It's gigantic business. Money flows more freely in the NCAA than a chocolate fountain at Hershey Park. There is always more than enough cash to go around when it comes to signing the trendiest coach or new uniforms for every day of the week. Yet college tuitions continue to rise. The cost of textbooks are astronomical. And try purchasing a meal plan for a kid at a Division III school, let alone a Division I school. So what's my solution to penalizing colleges, universities, and the athletic personnel that run these programs? Well, it's so simple that it would make a chancellor's head spin. The penalized school should have to divert athletic funding into academics. Yes, I know it's against NCAA policy to do so, but that's the point. The penalized school should have to increase academic scholarships during the probationary period, and the university should have to seek corporate sponsorships for student meal plans and textbooks. If you can put an orange juice logo on a football field, you can slap a Barnes & Noble sticker on a textbook saying that the book giant paid for it. Don't think these things are expensive? Ask the kids who are graduating and who have hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans to pay off. Ask the kid who plays sports and won't come out of college with a major league signing bonus. Slap the colleges and universities who do wrong with a penalty of academics. If they have to operate their sports programs at a loss for a couple of years, that's okay. They'll make it back when the probation is over. The NCAA must make changes, and the sooner they make them, the better the schools and those kids that we call student athletes will be. There's a reason why the word student is in front of the word athlete. Who knows? Maybe there will be a Nobel Peace Prize winner coming out instead of a Heisman Trophy winner. And that's The View from my dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete, has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.